Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Back at the Legacy Le Show Dome, I guess would the original Le Show Dome, at the home of the homeless. No homeless people here to welcome me back. But, ladies and gentlemen, the Los Angeles iteration of Judith Owens and my Christmas musical offering has already sold out due to the monstrous marketing power of my home station here. So those of you here in Southern California who feel left out at that announcement, here's what you got to do. Come see us in Oakland, Seattle, Chicago, New York, and New Orleans, But I would say and, because in every city, different musical performers join us, different guests. It's a different show, kind of. For the benefit around the country, all those other appearances for the benefit of the New Orleans Musicians Clinic here in Los Angeles, for the benefit of the Tipitinas Foundation in New Orleans. And it's Christmas time, or Hanukkah time, or the other times. Anyway, that's where we'll be. And those aren't sold out yet because I haven't talked about it yet here on the broadcast. So now I have. Ladies and gentlemen, how are things going in the AFAC, in the world of AFAC? Well, this story comes from Asia Times and gives you a slightly different view of what's going on in AFAC. Abdullah, and I was abjured this week by a letter writer, email writer, not to make fun of people's names, because it's juvenile. Abdullah, who this week withdrew from the presidential election runoff in Afghanistan, thereby handing victory to the incumbent, Hamid Karzai, did so under pressure from the United States, according to Asia Times. In exchange for the pullout of Abdullah, Pakistan's military has agreed to actively mediate between Washington and the Taliban over a reconciliation plan that will allow the United States to exit from Afghanistan with a semblance of success. Gotta love those semblances. A senior Pakistani, I'm still reading this story, a senior Pakistani diplomat involved in back-channel negotiations on Pakistan, Afghanistan, and U.S. relations told Asia Times on the condition of anonymity that the deal over Abdullah, whom Pakistan considers to be pro-India, nothing worse you can say about somebody in Pakistan, I guess, the deal was made during the three-day visit to Pakistan last week of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She met with the Chief of Army Staff, General Ashfaq Pervez Kiani, and the Director General of ISI, the Pakistani version of the CIA, only worse, Lieutenant General Ahmad Shuja Pasha. It was agreed that all U.S.-led negotiations with Abdullah, which included offering him the position of Chief Executive Officer of Afghanistan, that apparently was being considered, would stop, and instead Karzai would get full backing for a second five-year term. It also acknowledged that Washington's political leadership, like the Pentagon, now accepts that the Taliban-led insurgency in Afghanistan is best tackled with contact between Pakistan armed forces and the Taliban and not by the political governments of the region, i.e., military calls the shots over there. Pakistan, of course, is engaged in a battle against the Pakistani Taliban and other militants. In this context, Clinton supported Pakistan's vision of Afghanistan that Abdullah's participation as a major player in the government would be detrimental to the cause of dialogue with the Taliban. Clinton also played a major role in India's decision to pull out its forces, have you heard about this, from the Pakistan-India border near Kashmir, allowing the Pakistani army to concentrate on its fight against militants in the tribal areas. These developments dramatically unfolded at a juncture when there was clear hostility between the Pakistani armed forces and Washington on the conditions attached to the aid package for Pakistan approved in the U.S. last month. The package triples non-military aid to Pakistan to an annual outlay of $1.5 billion for 5 years, but the Pakistani army expressed serious concerns about clauses impacting on national security. Those are conditions relating to the non-intervention of the Pakistani armed forces in political affairs and clear guarantees about nuclear non-proliferation by Pakistan and action against non-proliferators. The army Doesn't like that. I guess that tells you where those clauses are going. To the clauses. Ladies and gentlemen, so anyway, maybe that's what happened. Maybe that's why Abdullah is gone. Gone. A Los Angeles dog trainer correction. Yes, very rare these days. On the broadcast. In an NFL column in Monday's sports section, Minnesota Vikings quarterback Brett Favre was quoted as saying, "It didn't seem weird until I got in near the pier," talking about his return to Green Bay, Wisconsin. What he actually said was, "It didn't seem weird till I got in near De Pere," which is a town between Appleton and Green Bay. It's the Los Angeles Times for you, a dog trainer for you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, news about early Christmases. The KKSR radio station in Tri-Cities, Washington, became an early adopter of an all-Christmas music format a week ago Friday. Quote, "With holiday music being like audio comfort food, totally upbeat and associated with warm, happy family experiences, we figured it would be nice to start Christmas a little early this year." That's from Radio and Music Pros, who also, ladies and gentlemen, in case you're wondering whether to get an HD radio, a so-called HD radio, because of all the fine, you know, new vistas of programming available to you if you were to purchase an HD, so-called HD radio. And it's so-called because there's nothing H and nothing D about it. Just call that because it's supposedly cool. Also from radioandmusicpros.com, CBS Radio is using its HD channels to, quote, "expand the brand." What does that mean? The CBS-owned K-Rock in Los Angeles is now being pumped into San Diego as well. And WFAN New York, the sports station, is now being beamed to Orlando, Tampa, and West Palm Beach. So you don't have to be in the home city to get those radio stations, a feat that had normally previously only been accomplished with the aid of the Internet. Hello, welcome to the show.
In a book I had, God was by my side. My name and lights up there on the marquee, and God was very proud. I've been a miner for a heart of gold, a dreamer who just won't wake up. I thought I'd plunge into the deepest vein. It wasn't deep enough. And I will fall 100 stories and open up my hand and scatter all my dreams of glory like seeds upon the land. Picture on my wall of fame, next to the grocery list. I keep forgetting I should take you down. I'm gonna take you down. And I will fall 100 stories and open up my to fall 100 promised to forget the ones who took more than they gave. At least I'll have some peace of mind as I dig their graves. And on my way down, I hope to see the one I hurt the most. Perhaps he'll open up his window and we'll fly this ghost. And I will fall 100 stories and open up my hand and scatter all my dreams of glory like seeds upon the land. And I'll join the league of failures. I bet that I'll be glad to fall 100 stories and I'll have peace at last. And I'll set this house on fire and burn the whole thing down. My laurels turn to ashes and I'll still be
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's clean, it's cheap, it's too safe to meter. France is trying to avert a crisis of confidence over its new generation EPR. Not NPR, not CPR, EPR nuclear reactor. Regulators in three countries raised questions this week over control and safety systems, you know, for the nuclear reactor. French government officials are expected to contact authorities in the United Arab Emirates in an attempt to assuage concerns as the Gulf state weighs bids in one of the world's biggest nuclear tenders on offer. Those nuclear tenders, they are so tasty and crispy. The French companies Areva, designer of the EPR, as well as Total and GDF Suez are among the three bidders for a contract to build at least four and possibly six reactors in the UAE. Let's go there. Concerns raised this week, though, according to one source close to the bidding, might have dented France's image. It hasn't helped at all, especially as one of the key arguments has been that the EPR is safer than all the others, said the source. It's the world's first third-generation nuclear reactor. It's 3G. It's got to be good. It's almost HD, is leading France's international drive in the atomic energy sector. Paris says the safety concerns have been expressed as part of the normal process in building a new nuclear reactor. Officials will insist the concerns have become public only because of France's transparent safety regime. However, other observers said the recent questions voiced by authorities in Britain, Finland, and France over the independence of the safety system from the operational control system were merely the latest in a series of matters that had come up in Abu Dhabi. Areva found itself reprimanded in recent months by nuclear safety authorities. I have apprised you of that earlier. The nuclear safety bodies in Britain, France, and Finland have ordered Areva to modify the safety features on the EPR. And shares of Areva fell on the news. Oh, no. On a related matter, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to turn to news from outside the bubble. And here it is. How does that happen? Volume. Because it's clean, cheap, too safe to meter. From the Times of London, British families could be forced to pay up to $325 extra on their annual energy bills. Why? To help fund a new generation of nuclear power stations. Under plans proposed by another French company, EDF Energy. It wants to build four reactors in Britain at a cost of about $35 billion. It's accused of holding the government ransom after an executive told the Times of London that no nuclear reactors would be built unless the British government agreed to underwrite part of the cost. Because we believe in a free market, except when we don't. Humphrey Cadu Hudson, managing director of EDF Energy's new nuclear business in Britain, said the nuclear program would proceed only if the British government ensured that consumers paid more for electricity from coal and gas, which is cheaper, but produces more greenhouse gas, making nuclear more competitive. Why, it's a carbon tax. To fix the market, this is the Times of London's words, owned by Rupert Murdoch, by the way. To fix the market in favor of nuclear energy, he proposed a minimum price on the permits that energy companies need to buy to emit carbon dioxide. His intervention threatens the British government's plan to boost the proportion of electricity generated from nuclear power, considered critical to Britain's energy security as supplies of North Sea gas run out. The government has pointedly refused any kind of subsidy for new nuclear power stations and is relying on private industry to finance the program. Good luck with that. On a related subject, the hidden cost of, from the Observer in London, the hidden cost of Britain's new generation of nuclear power could be the destruction of the Kalahari Desert in Namibia and millions of tons of extra greenhouse gas emissions a year. The desert with its towering sand dunes and spectacular lunar-like landscapes is at the center of an international uranium rush led by a subsidiary of the British mining giant Rio Tinto and, here's that name again, the French state-owned nuclear company Areva. Documents setting out the British government's case on the need for nuclear power involves the expanding of the existing giant mine, which already provides nearly 8% of the world's uranium, into the Namibia Naukluft National Park. Areva has already leased hundreds of square kilometers. It's like miles to us, of the desert where it plans to build one of the world's largest uranium mines. At least 20 other mining companies from around the world, that's Wolf Blitzer's way of saying it, around the world, have also been, around the world, have also been given licenses to, that's juvenile, come on, have been given licenses to explore thousands of square kilometers of the national park. Six new mines, several of which would be in the park, are at the development stage. Namibia has some of the planet's richest uranium deposits, expects to become the third largest uranium producer and largest exporter within 5 years. The mines are all expected to be in open pits up to 200 meters below the desert sands with their waste heaps, acid plants, and giant slurry ponds. They will extend over hundreds of square kilometers. Large areas of the desert will inevitably be devastated, says Birchen Kors, director of the Namibian Environment Group EarthLife. They will do immense damage. We fear there will be major contamination of the groundwater supplies. But hey, it's cheap, it's safe, it's too clean to meter. From The Guardian, a secret report on the checkered history of priceless Aramaic bowls loaned to a leading university has exposed an apparent attempt to cover up British academic connections to a potentially deadly trade in stolen Iraqi antiquities. The findings of the study, which was suppressed by a controversial legal agreement in 2007, have at last solved a long-standing archaeological mystery. It confirms the expert view the bowls were stolen from the historical site of Babylon and should be returned to Iraq or handed over to the police. The report was completed in 2006, but suppressed a year later in a legal settlement made between University College London and the putative owner of the bowls, the multimillionaire Norwegian collector Martin Schoen. But a copy of its findings reveals a specialist in archaeology convinced that the bowls dating from the 5th to 8th centuries must have come from Iraq illegally. They believe the rare finds were probably dug up from the remains of Babylon sometime after the 1991 Gulf War, were not found in Jordan, as the collector believed. See, we're doing good things for Iraq. They're taking the bowls. From the Times of London, the long-term future and reputation of Britain's armed forces is at risk unless progress is made in Afghanistan. When have you heard that before? We have to keep fighting this war for the credibility of our armed forces. Nice. This is according to the two most senior officials of the Ministry of Defense. They warn it in a document seen by the Times of London. The pronouncement by Air Chief Marshal Sir Jock Stirrup. No, that was just a juvenile pause. He's the chief of the defense staff, and Sir Bill Jeffrey, of the parliamentary secretary, leaves no room for the possibility of early withdrawal from Afghanistan. Neither, according to the New York Times, by the way, does any of the three options being considered by the Obama administration. But more about that in a moment. Their unequivocal statement of commitment in a jointly signed document circulated as guidance to Ministry of Defense staff. While the Prime Minister made huffing and puffing noises towards Hamid Karzai, saying, "You got to clean the corruption up." And you know he took that seriously. You know he did, because how could he not? Yeah, that was a juvenile pause, too. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, more news from outside the bubble. Police officers, this from the Telegraph in London, police officers in Britain are being issued with a list of almost 3,000 slang words and phrases associated with illegal drugs in order to stay one step ahead of criminals. The document has been drawn up by the Police National Legal Database for use by all forces in England and Wales. On the list are around 250 words for heroin alone, including Old Steve, nurse, lemonade, Harry, George, dog food, Rambo, elephant, Scott, gravy, Jack, Helen, Henry, Jones, witch, horse bite, dead on arrival. The term Aunt Hazel is also used, although this should not be confused, says the Telegraph, with Aunt Mary, marijuana, and Aunt Nora, cocaine. The names of some celebrities are also used as codes for drugs by criminals, including Kate Bush for marijuana and Jerry Springer for heroin. Confusingly, the term LBJ, best known as the initials of former U.S. President Johnson, is now used to describe three drugs, LSD, PCP, and heroin. Another former international statesman, Mikhail Gorbachev, has found his name used to describe LSD, known as both Gorbachev and Gorby. These are sophisticated drug dealers, huh? They read the papers? Several cartoon or children's characters are used to identify drugs, including Bart Simpson, heroin, Beavis and Butthead, LSD, Casper the Ghost, crack, Dennis the Menace, ecstasy, Felix the Cat, LSD, Snow White, cocaine, I get that, and Peter Pan for PCP. Rhyming slang is also employed, for instance, I'll be back for crack. Hitch up the reindeers means to inhale cocaine, while an ice cream habit or Pepsi habit indicates the occasional use of drugs. There are several terms that describe a crack addict searching on their hands and knees for drugs. Well, that's a nice picture. These include bass crazies, chicken scratching, and hen picking. A Lamborghini or Maserati is a crack pipe made from a plastic rum bottle and a rubber spark plug cover. It sounds like such a good lifestyle, doesn't it? The police themselves are known as Bulls, Rollers, Heat, or Big John. Hot heroin is poisoned drugs given to a police informant. The marketing manager from the Police National Legal Database, they have a marketing manager, ladies and gentlemen, the police database does, said the list of words was constantly being updated. If there's a new word or term going around, then a police officer will tell us and we will add it to the list. Stay one step ahead of the criminals by hearing what the criminals say first. And, ladies and gentlemen, from The Guardian, Barack Obama is coming under mounting international pressure to make an early decision on his strategy in Afghanistan amid fears of a dangerous drift as he agonizes over his next moves. There is growing concern in London and in NATO governments about the time it's taking for the Obama administration to decide its strategy. It's make up your mind time, one minister said. A Ministry of Defense source added, without a decision, there's a concern the British public will lose faith, unquote. News from outside the bubble, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And maybe it's time for the Obama administration to take a different approach to making a decision on the Afghan situation.
Tonight, our final two contestants face off in the competition to determine who will present a new Afghanistan policy at this fall's Senate Foreign Relations Committee show. Only one policy designer can win. Anything less is defeat, and that is not an option. Welcome to Project Afghanway.
Hello, designers.
Hello, Tim.
Hello, Tim.
That's Deputy Assistant Undersecretary Tim to you. Designers, tonight's challenge is the supreme test of your ability to craft a policy that's elegant in design and to present it in a way that makes it accessible to the mass marketplace. God knows if I could do that, I wouldn't be selling detergent on TV. Your job, designers, is to select a television talk show to appear on and to craft a 45-second appearance explaining your Afghanistan policy in a way that's appropriate for that show. Now, I'll be dropping in to help and annoy you all along the way. You have 18 hours and the run of our wardrobe department to construct your look. Good luck!
Ethan, 33, Harvard Doctorate in International Relations, minor in Media Studies.
I always knew I should watch more TV. Now it's too late. I don't even know these shows. I'm gonna have to do some fast work on the net.
What? Hello? No way! The internet can't be down! Not now!
Clarissa, 27. Youngest assistant professor in Johns Hopkins history. Ghostwrites articles for Joe Biden.
I'm going to prepare a presentation for Bill O'Reilly. That's the ultimate challenge for any foreign policy that's not all-out armed conflict. Also, the set's mainly blue. That makes it easy. I think.
14 hours, designers. How are we doing?
I'm thinking Meet the Press, where a nuanced military buildup paired with an unannounced pullback to selected bases might be appreciated by that sophisticated inside the Beltway audience.
You sure we want to go inside Beltway? I'm just asking. I'm perplexed.
Well, as I understand the challenge, it's matching policy and platform. Or have I just not been getting enough sleep?
Not even Harvey Weinstein is getting enough sleep. Just a word of advice for Meet the Press. You might want a slightly more relaxed shoulder treatment.
Thanks, Tim.
Make it work! Hi, Cloetha.
Hi, Tim.
What do we got?
Well, I narrowed down my policy outline from last week.
Good. You were a little bit big picture for the room, you know? No more Uzbekistan or Tajikistan?
No, strictly AFPAC.
See, I think that works. How's your look coming?
Well, I pulled this auburn jacket. Little red top, just for some curb appeal.
Oh, I know what you're thinking, but can I say a color? Traffic light amber?
You think?
Red says something to O'Reilly's people, doesn't it?
Oh, come on, Tim. I mean, I'm not doing Glenn Beck.
Just think about it. And two words to both of you designers. Troop levels.
Meanwhile, the judges and I were reviewing last week's results. Howard Cause of the Cause Institute for Fashionable Policy did not like what Ethan was showing him.
He's superficial, he's glib, he's putting ruffles and flourishes on a tired old policy. I mean, nuanced. Show me the young people who are buying nuance.
I think he's got a good eye for details. I mean, dropping detained Taliban over North Korea. Nobody else ever showed me that.
I'm concerned about Cloetha.
Margaret Sloss, editor of Policy People magazine.
I think she thinks going down market wins the day. I wish. I think she needs to tailor her ideas a little bit more to Senate Foreign Relations. I mean, that's the show that counts.
She went to Pakistan last year. I don't know whether that helps her or hurts her.
5 hours to go, designers, and here's a special guest, Dr. Henry Kissinger. Each of you has 15 minutes to pick his brain. Good luck!
God, I remember watching Henry Kissinger on TV when I was in, like, grade school. There's so much I want to ask him, but I have to concentrate on my policy.
Ethan, whatever you present, you don't want it to be critiqued as another Vietnam. Take it from me.
Henry Kissinger was like somebody my mom talked about. I really wonder if he's got anything to say that's relevant to me.
Cloetha, Tim is right. Stay away from red.
Time's up, designers. Now remember, you're the policy. Be the policy. Next stop, makeup.
You know, I've thought about it. If I won, would I actually get to be on Meet the Press? But I can't let myself get too excited because, after all, it's still all about the Afghanis.
I've got to think I'm going into enemy territory to defend my policy. That's what makes me strong. Unfortunately, it's also what makes me weak, so we'll see.
Designers, this is it. Ethan, we couldn't get David Gregory to tape a greeting to you, but there's his picture on the big monitor. Your time starts now.
This is not a radical shift in Afghanistan policy. It's an evolution. Just as in post-surge Iraq, the troops withdraw to their bases, out of the people's daily experience. Big influx of civilian aid workers. And reliable metrics so we can measure our progress.
Clarissa, Bill O'Reilly has taped your intro.
Now, Clarissa, you think we should just cut and run, is that it? What say you?
Bill, you got to know when to hold 'em and when to fold 'em. It's our troop buildup in Afghanistan that's destabilizing Pakistan, and that's where our attention should be. A key part of staying strong is knowing we can't do everything everywhere. So we go in where the Pakistani army doesn't dare go. That's strength.
The judges are evaluating the presentations. The policy designers are awaiting their decision. And it all happens right here, next time. We're not dithering, it's just careful deliberation. And we're waiting for sweeps. Till then, so long from Project Afghanway.
Bye-bye.
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, it's I don't know if you've heard or read about this, but former Vice President George W. Bush,
yeah, he's out.
No, but he's now involved in a new line of work. He's a speaker, apparently very well compensated speaker, as befits all former presidents, of course, you know, from the respect and the thing, at a series of motivation seminars. That's right, he's helping get people motivated. And according to the report on the first one of these, he says there's a series. Everything's a series. According to the report on the first one from the Washington Post, this was a motivation weekend in Fort Worth, because, like, those people aren't motivated enough. They're about to secede. They're not motivated enough. The name of the seminar is, of course, Get Motivated, with an exclamation point, to motivate you. That's you know, period wouldn't motivate you. Before ex-President Bush appeared, according to the Washington Post, the crowd stood up and danced to the Beach Boys song, Surfin' USA. And I tried to figure out what the connection was to President Bush, and then I realized, so close, and yet so far.
Well, it may not be legal, but it sure as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. But it's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives gulp air. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go. You can't get off if you want to. And it's really hard work, but for us it feels much more like play. If the tables were turned, we'd feel really burned. But let's go water.
Me. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Levi Johnston has been vindicated. Conan O'Brien apologized on Thursday's Tonight Show for having aired a segment that mocked the father of Sarah Palin's grandson by drawing on unverified posts from a fake Levi Johnston Twitter page. On Wednesday, the Tonight Show bit featured a deadpan William Shatner reciting the supposed tweets in beatnik verse. But On Thursday, O'Brien said, "I'd like to apologize personally to Levi Johnston and his lawyer and publicist for misrepresenting him in any way."
Having somebody read somebody else's Twitter writings, what a great idea. I wonder where they came up with that.
Ralph the Talking Computer sitting in with us here today. Ralph is well known to regular listeners of this show for occasionally coming on and reading the Twitter writings of Larry King. Ralph, are you suggesting in some way that the people at the Conan O'Brien show were influenced by your performances here?
Oh, good Lord, no, Harry. Hmm. What do I have in common with William Shatner?
Well,
I have no hair.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see.
Yeah.
And my delivery, so I've been told,
mm-hmm.
is weird.
I believe you've been told that by me. Well, okay, then all's fair in love and media, Ralph, I guess, is the conclusion to draw from this little experience.
Bottom line, babe, Larry King is funnier than Levi Johnston.
Okay, we can take that to the bank. And speaking of banks, John Reed, who helped engineer the merger that created Citigroup, apologized this week for his role in building a company that's taken $45 billion in direct U.S. aid and said banks should be divided into separate parts, like they're doing in Britain. "I'm sorry," Reed said in an interview. "These are people I love and care about. You can imagine emotionally it's not easy to see what's happened." Citigroup is now 34% owned by the Treasury Department. And Reed said, "I would compartmentalize the industry for the same reason you compartmentalize ships. If you have a leak, the leak doesn't spread and sink the whole vessel. So generally speaking, you'd have consumer banking separate from trading bonds and equity." Lawmakers, he said, were wrong to repeal the Depression-era Glass-Steagall Act in 1999, a repeal signed by Bill Clinton. Reed said, at the time he supported overturn of the law. "We learn from our mistakes," Reed said. Yeah, that's what we do. We're humans and we learn from our mistakes. CNBC's Darren Rovell has apologized for calling American Meb Keflezighi a ringer and grouching that his New York Marathon victory shouldn't count as a real American achievement. Quote, "I said that Keflezighi's win, the first by an American since 1982, wasn't as big as it was being made out to be because there was a difference between being an American-born product and being an American citizen. Frankly, I didn't account for the fact that virtually all of Keflezighi's running experience came as a U.S. citizen. My critics made their best point. It turns out he moved to the United States in time to develop at every level in America, so Meb is in fact an American-trained athlete and an American citizen, and he should be celebrated. That makes a difference and makes him different from the ringer I accused him of being. He didn't deserve that comparison, and I apologize for that," unquote. Chris Brown apologized for the Rihanna incident again, this time on MTV News. What? There's news on MTV? He apologized for what happened with Rihanna, his former girlfriend, and explains why he has publicly apologized so many times. It's so people keep saying Chris Brown. Dateline New Delhi, Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh apologized this week to the widow of a man who was prevented from receiving emergency treatment because the premier was touring the hospital. Singh wrote in a letter that he'd heard desperately ill S. Verma could not get access to the hospital in time because of the restrictions in place for my visit there. This is something I deeply regret. Spokesman for California Attorney General Jerry Brown has resigned after admitting he secretly taped telephone conversations with reporters. His resignation letter, Scott Gerber wrote, he didn't make the recordings to play gotcha, but simply to have an accurate record of official on-the-record statements on matters of public concern. He apologized to Brown and to the reporters, admitting he made serious errors in judgment. Dateline Edmonton, Alberta. Alberta's health super board has fired a mid-level manager involved in releasing H1N1 vaccine to the Calgary Flames hockey team and their families instead of saving the shots for those at risk of becoming dangerously ill. "Like most Albertans, I am deeply offended that this has occurred," said a statement signed by the board chairman of Alberta Health Services. "We set the expectation this should not have happened and it should not happen again," he said. The name and position of staff member were not released. "The special treatment for the Flames and their families is unacceptable to us, and we apologize." An Army recruiter used a gay slur and an expletive during military-supervised testing at Durango High School in Colorado last week, an incident that has raised parents' ire. Students who overheard the comment confronted the man, whose identity was not released. juniors and seniors were required to attend a testing session Thursday that was overseen by recruiters from the U.S. Army. Yeah, because we're a free country, right? Or to do an alternative project as part of a career day. Okay, that's freedom. During the military aptitudes test, several students overheard the soldier use the expletive and gay slur. A spokesman for the Army's Denver recruiting battalion says he's investigating, but he said, I would like to apologize for that lack of professionalism. It did not really reflect well in the organization. It's the Army. They don't swear in the Army. The parents of a Sacramento... Wrong article. Sue me. The parents of a Sacramento State student beaten to death by a dorm mate last month said they were stunned to receive a $30,000 bill from the UC Davis Medical Center, as well as a letter asking their murdered son not to return because of payment issues. UC Davis spokeswoman Carol Gann apologized for the letter, calling the incident an accident of automation. Said the bill should have been sent to the insurance company. On the other hand, a Canadian federal department has apologized to a British Columbia woman who was mistakenly flagged as dead in government records. Nancy Towell's problems began with her Canada pension plan widow's benefit check didn't arrive in September. She made phone calls for 2 days to various federal departments. A department spokeswoman said a human error was made on a client's file. So humans blame humans, humans blame machines. Wrestler Chris Jericho is apologizing for some recent comments he made at a film festival that many considered racist and homophobic. He apologized, so I would say Chris Jericho. The accountant and auditor of incarcerated financier Bernard Madoff apologized to victims of the multi-billion-dollar Ponzi scheme and said he also lost thousands in the con in a Manhattan courtroom. David Frayling pleaded guilty to securities fraud and will be going to jail. CBS announcer Gus Johnson apologized after making a controversial remark describing Titans running back Chris Johnson on Sunday, last Sunday, as Chris Johnson, who is black, broke through the Jaguars' defense for a 52-yard touchdown run. Gus Johnson, who is also black, said in his excitable style of the Titans tailback, he's got getting away from the cops speed. The comment drew criticism after the game. He said, if there is a perception of racism in this analogy, it is not coming from me. People of all races have run from the law. However, to those who are offended, I apologize. Dateline Washington, a Philadelphia newspaper, apologized Monday for running a department store ad congratulating the Philadelphia Phillies on winning the World Series. The Inquirer deeply regrets the error. We apologize for any inconvenience caused. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
Went to see a movie show, found myself an empty row. Thought the show was just all right, same old Saturday night. Then I made the usual stop, coffee at the coffee shop. Friendly face nowhere in sight, same old Saturday night. I really thought the papers I bought would help me forget you for a while. Believe me, honey, the funnies weren't funny. They didn't even make me smile. Now I wish you'd lift the phone. Fun is fun, but not alone. Till you let me hold you tight, same old Saturday night. I really thought that the papers I bought would help me forget you for a while. But believe me, honey, the funnies weren't funny. They didn't even make me smile. How I wish you'd lift that phone. Fun is fun, but not alone. Till you let me hold you tight. Same old Saturday night. Only your face can help me erase that same old Saturday.
Gentlemen,
he's not a general, he commands no troops, he's not an inspector, he peeks at no stoops, he's an inspector general.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
The inspector general for the Homeland Security Department faults one DHS agency for not doing enough to prevent chemical and biological weapons from being smuggled into the country. Just that. In a partially redacted document, the Inspector General's office found that Customs and Border Protection officers had not conducted a formal risk assessment to determine which pathways, including maritime cargo, pose the highest risk of biological and chemical weapons entering the nation. The report recommends a formal risk assessment be carried out. The FEMA Inspector General says the agency is at high risk of paying duplicate benefits to disaster victims because of limitations in its business processes and information technology systems. We wouldn't want that. And a blistering new report concludes that state of California correction officials failed repeatedly to properly supervise accused rapist and kidnapper Philip Garrido for 10 years. That's all. Missing numerous opportunities to discover that he had allegedly kept J.C. Lee Dugard captive in his backyard during the entire time California authorities were supposed to be keeping watch over him. Among the mistakes was a failure to investigate why there was a 12-year-old girl inside the home of a registered sex offender, why clearly visible utility lines were running from his home to a concealed compound where he allegedly kept the girl, and why agents took no action when they received information clearly showing he had violated his parole terms. Aside from that, right on the case, the news of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Hey, Bernie Kerik pleaded guilty to 8 charges, including tax fraud and lying to White House officials. Guilty, Your Honor, he said as the judge read the charges against him. Kerik faces up to 30 years in prison on the most serious of the charges. Bernie Kerik started his public life as Rudy Giuliani's driver, soon ascended to New York City police chief, which he was during the 9/11 matter, at which point He commandeered an R&R flat apartment, supposedly for police officers during 9/11. He commandeered it for a love squat with then Murdoch publishing magnet editor and publisher Judith Regan. Soon afterwards, Rudy Giuliani was, soon afterwards, he then went to Iraq for 3 months. Train police until he stopped. And then Rudy Giuliani nominated him, proposed that he be nominated. Actually, President Bush was fixing to nominate him to be the first Secretary of Homeland Security until he was found to have hired an illegal alien as a nanny. And that began the fall that climaxed with his guilty plea this week. So there's finally an end to the story of Bernie Kerik and to the song.
Kerik was there with a countenance just as grim as a cleric's stare. When his house it needed fixing, there was no money, he was Nixon. When the mobsters would mix in, Kerik was there.
Kerik was there.
When the city was on fire, Kerik was there. Taking time out only for a torrid affair, just to make a good impression, he used a flat meant for decompression of the guys in his profession. Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there. When Mayor Rudy had his passion. Carrick was there. When the time had come to cash in. When Iraq needed policing, Carrick was there. Though some said it was a fleecing, could Carrick care? It was 3 long months of training, then the crap, it started raining. So without complaining, Carrick was out of there. When Homeland needed securing, Carrick was there. But his nanny records were found in disrepair. So Bernie took a powder before the questioning got louder. On the pages of the tabloids, Carrick was there, was there. In New York Federal Prison, Carrick is there. Bunking with those he once busted, does he have a prayer? Oh, while Rudy may be running, it's Bernie he'll be shunning. For a turnaround most stunning, Carrick is there.
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 Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. And if you're wondering where the Christmas musical offering is happening in your town, it's Joe's Pub in New York, Yoshi's in Oakland, Triple Door in Seattle, The Space in Evanston, and the CAC in New Orleans. And it'd be just like Bernie Carrick serving hard 30, if you'd agree to join with me there, and next week here. Would you? All right. Thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Hey, the next new song from the Greed and Fear Project comes out on digital download, I think, this Tuesday. I'll check. Let you know. And I'll let you know it at LeTwits at Twitter. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.